Hey, Zero Block 30 listeners, you can find us every Tuesday and Friday on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and YouTube. Prime members can also listen ad-free on Amazon Music.
Summer is all about the freedom to have fun. Forget a vacation and take a tequila-cation with new Truly Tequila Soda. This refreshing blend of real fruit juice from concentrate, sparkling water, and premium tequila blanco is the drink of the summer. Try all four refreshing flavors, all with 5% ABV and just 100 calories. Truly Tequila Soda. Keep it light. Hard Seltzer Beverage Company, Boston, Massachusetts. Please drink responsibly.
This week's episode of Zero Block 30 is brought to you by our good friends at MyBookie. I wanted you guys to know about MyBookie because my beloved Jaguars are playing tonight and people are sleeping on them because they're playing the Super Bowl favorite Bucks. You might be saying, hey, the actual Bucks aren't the Super Bowl favorite, you dumb motherfucker chaps. But in my mind, they are. So if we come out and dominate, you're going to win money because you're going to bet on my Jaguars. But you're probably not because you're listening to this on Friday and they played last night. Joke's on you, bitch. That was just a prank. Anyways, every other game for the rest of the season, you can go to mybookie.ag. It's the number one rated sports online site for three straight years. If you want to bet on Mayweather, the MLB races that are heating up, the NFL preseason, the future picks, there's so much to wager on. And all dudes, all chicks, everybody knows that they are going to win money with MyBookie. The best part about MyBookie is they actually pay. That's good. It's actually good when the site actually pays. MyBookie actually pays. Join MyBookie now, and you will get $100 or 100% bonus. Use promo code ZERO to activate that offer. Visit MyBookie.ag today. Call 844-900-BETS. You play, you win, you get motherfucking pay. Expert or rookie, you got to check out MyBookie. Sign up today. We're going to switch it up this week and have a different group song because I think on one of those shows, it's like American Idol or America's Got Talent or some bullshit like that. There is an Air Force group that made it to the live shows, and we're going to let them sing us in to the show. Let's go. The Air Force dudes just make me make fun of them, man. Like, I don't want to. As a Marine, I try to be inclusive on everybody. As a soldier, my man, Connor tries to be inclusive on everybody.
They make it hard on us.
Just so damn easy. By the way, this is Zero Block 30. I'm Uncle Chaps. We're presented by Barstool Sport. That was one of the Air Force a cappella singing bands.
Yeah, I think I heard that they're from the Air Force Academy, but it looked like the lead singer was the second lieutenant. So I don't know. Maybe he graduated already or something. But yeah, Jesus. You know, they want us to take their school seriously. They want us to take their branch of service seriously. And then they go and do something like that, which that song is not that great, in my opinion. I don't think that's a great song to pick. And if I'm being honest, I wasn't actually blown away. I think they got more praise because they were in the military, not because they were actually a talented group of singers.
Oh, no doubt. I mean, their harmonies were tight. I gotta give them that. The guy who loves fucking Pitch Perfect, their harmonies were pretty tight. What I will say, though, is there's so many other jobs. I don't get it as a Marine, man. We don't have that shit. Like, I've seen, like, the Army, you guys have a singing group, too. I'm pretty sure the Navy does. As a Marine, that's why we, like, make fun of other branches so much, because we don't have anything that's close to that.
You don't have the there's no Marine Corps band?
The band, but like I told you before, the Marine Corps band are actually riflemen first. They do shit.
Yeah.
We have the drill team, but all those guys are grunts.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
I mean, they're like straight up grunts if they're on the silent drill team. Not saying that makes it better. It's just hard. Like, so whenever these dudes are doing something, I don't get spending money on that in the military budget, first of all.
Yeah. Obviously, somebody had to pay. Someone had to pay.
That's $70,000 job a year to go sing on stage.
Right. Yeah. I mean, yeah, I was going to say, someone's got to put them up in a hotel. Someone's got to fly them to wherever that is being recorded. So that's coming out of the budget.
No disrespect to the people who are singing. If you're singing, if you got a job making $70,000 a year to go march around in a uniform and sing, more power to you. But I know for a fact, and Connor, you know for a fact, as being a former military member, the last thing, because they always schedule these types of things on fucking Fridays.
Yeah.
Always.
Yeah.
The last thing you want to do at 4 o'clock on Friday, they're like, hey, guys, we're going to get off a little bit early. It's going to be 1500, which is 3 o'clock for you civilian types. We're going to go there at 1500. And we are going to watch some people sing a cappella. No one wants that shit, man.
No one wants that force fun.
That is mandatory fun to a T. Because you can't even drink. You're not even drinking. You're
right.
Watching people sing like pop hits, like Now This Is What You Call Music 69, starring nice. Air Force Man.
Ridiculous. Oh, my goodness.
I saw that come up this week. I was like, you got to be kidding me. Anyways, how you doing, my friend?
I'm doing really well. You know, same as always. Always good. Nothing to complain about. No hate in my heart. I'm doing well this week.
Yeah, it's been a rough week. I know a lot of people are going to want to hear our thoughts about the statues, about what happened in Charlottesville. But you know what? We're not going to do that because that happened last weekend. This is Friday. I feel like there gets to be a point where, because if something happens later in the week, there's going to be a new scandal by the time that it comes out. Mm-hmm. And you saw that as evidence last week. Last week, the biggest topic on the planet was what we were going to do with North Korea. And then by Saturday, people completely forgot that North Korea was even a country again.
I forgot North Korea happened. I completely forgot what was going on there. It seemed like it subsided after our boy, General Mattis, laid the smackdown in his proclamation to North Korea. And then, yeah, all that stuff happened, and it completely just went to the back of my mind. It's crazy how that works.
Yeah, it is. And General Mattis has completely assumed the title. I don't even consider him the Secretary of Defense anymore. I consider him the Secretary of War because that's what he's been acting like. Like, we are doing a lot of hearkening back to Civil War time. So if we're going to do that, Mattis is already doing it.
Yeah.
Like, he is being straight up honest. But I think any Department of Defense official for the past, I don't know, since 1775, if you ask them, if someone attacks American soil, what are you going to do about it? You give them the answer that there will be hell to pay and there will be annihilation. Like, that's the answer that you give. You want the president to be a little bit more diplomatic, but the Secretary of Defense, his job is the posture. Like, it is, because that's the part that he's using. The State Department is diplomatic. The Department of Defense is not diplomatic.
Right.
They say, we got a whole fucking shit ton of artillery. Mm-hmm. We will kill you.
Right. And he's not a politician. He doesn't give a shit what the left or the right thinks about. He's looking out for the best interest of these United States of America. And you made, a great point in your blog, how you said it seems as though sometimes he's a secretary, but then other times he puts that general hat back on, you know, and he kind of remembers what it feels like to be in the military and how he should be addressing our members of the military, and it's great to see that. It's very refreshing.
Yeah, we saw that this week whenever he was out and he was talking to a lot of the new submariners and how that's going to go down, because submarine life, we've talked about a little bit on the show, submarine life is a fucking rough life. Mm. It is an isolated life. You don't go to port nearly as much as a lot of the other sailors, a lot of the other Marines who are on the ship. You are just straight up undersea for a long time. It's a rough, rough life.
Right. There's no like fresh. It's not like, I'm having a rough day, I'm going to go get some fresh air. No. You're just confined to that area.
And those confines are just that. They are confined, man. Like, you don't have a whole lot of places to go. If you're over 6 foot, you're not. That's what blows my mind about David Robinson. Was David Robinson 7 foot one being on a submarine for months at a time is absolutely bonkers. But Secretary Mattis goes in, and like you said, Cons, he goes in and he basically takes off his secretary hat and throws back on the 8-point Marine cover. He becomes the Marine general again.
Becomes Mad Dog.
He doesn't like that. He doesn't like that phrase, but we like it for him.
We like it for him.
So he puts back on his 8-point cover, and he comes out and says, because you sailors aren't pussies like everybody else sitting on the sideline. And to have somebody in one of the highest positions of government tell a group of sailors that they aren't pussies blew a lot of people's mind. But I don't think that you can know anything about Mattis's history and find that surprising that he used that type of language.
No, not even a little bit. But it definitely probably took some people aback because they're like, oh, he's his secretary. He's supposed to be polished. And, you know, at the core of him, he's a war fighter. He's a Marine through and through.
Now, I do want to go back. If we were in the Obama administration still, and Obama's Secretary of Defense comes out and says, you guys aren't a bunch of pussies, I feel like the political climate of political correctness is so much different now than it was even a year ago that would have been major, major news, having the Secretary of Defense address people and call them saying that they're not pussies.
I think the only reason you and I noticed it is because we follow military publications on Twitter. Otherwise, it didn't make any sort of national news that I saw.
And it would have been a big deal.
Yeah.
But Mattis before has said, like, The only thing that you need to carry a knife with you at all times in case there's cheesecake or you need to stab a motherfucker in the throat. Like, even on his memes, they clean it up because the actual quote is, you need to stab a motherfucker in the throat.
Right.
That dude is a Secretary of Defense, man. You need to say fucking, what's his name? Howard Dean from Vermont. Wasn't president because he went, yeah, like at some point. Secretary Mattis is talking about stabbing people in the throat, and he's the Secretary of Defense. I love it.
What do you think it's like for him walking around Washington? How do you think people react when he walks into a room?
I think that he's like modern-day John Wayne. Mm. Like, for people who are around the military, that he's just the epitome of a badass. He is Gran Torino in real life.
Yes, that's a great comparison. I love that. But you know what? It's not just that fear that he imposes on folks and that respect, but also it's the respect because he's an educated individual. He's not just like a hard-ass tough guy. He's actually very cerebral as well, so you have to respect him from both angles.
Yeah, no doubt. He's one of the most educated dudes in government. Speaking of educated, your school, West Point, I don't know if people have ever heard that you went there. They had some big news happen this weekend. You want to talk about that?
Yeah, I would love to talk about that because this is one of those days where, you know, I'm always proud to speak about my school. But then, you know, sometimes things come along and you're like, wow, that is awesome, especially amidst all of this talk about race in our country right now. And we had for the first time in the 215-year history of West Point, our first captain, our brigade commander, which is the highest ranking cadet at West Point, who is in charge of all of the cadets, is an African-American woman. We've had African-Americans, we've had women, but never an African-American woman. So Cadet Simone Askew from Fairfax, Virginia, assumed that position as of last week, and it's just been nothing but positive coming from the news about her appointment, and I've been reading about her and how impressive she is. And then I listened to, she did like a mini press conference in front of the superintendent's house. There was a lot of news organizations there. It was featured on the Today Show. But I listened to her speak, and my goodness, was I impressed. She was astute. She was very educated. She was answering everything. It seemed like it was almost as if she must have practiced these answers, and she didn't. She was speaking off the cuff, but she was so well prepared, so well spoken. It's just a very, very proud moment for all the alumni to see once again the military being at the forefront of, you know, of some of the more difficult discussions that we're having in this country, and yet the military, and specifically in this case, the United States Military Academy, ignoring race, ignoring gender, and saying, we don't care. We want the best person for that role. And Cadet Askew has been appointed to that role, and deservedly so. So it's a very proud, proud day for the Long Gray Line.
No doubt. Shout out to West Point. Shout out to the young – she's called the captain, right?
First captain. Yes, that is her.
So what happens with – because she got that position, say, or anybody else gets that position, what happens with their career? Like, how does that help them? Just another little notch in the belt?
Yeah, it's a notch, but it also, I mean, to get that rank, you're going to be pretty high ranking in your class anyway, because it's, you know, they take into account your academic standing, your physical standing, and your military standing, you know, all three of those grades. So you're probably, you know, going to have a nice career. If you look at some of the past first captains, you know, General Vincent Brooks is someone that they mentioned. Because he was the first captain in 1982, and, you know, he's an African-American man. And obviously he's had a tremendous career as a four-star general. So I think it sets you up for success in that you can choose your path. You have your choice of branch of service that you're going to go into and where you post. And, I mean, if you're making that rank, you care that much about achieving that rank. Like, it was never my goal to become the first captain. And it's not the goal of many cadets, but if it's your goal, it probably bodes well for your future in the military. It says, you know, you want to do great things for the military and bring people together and work hard for a lot of other people. So it's just it is a little bit of a notch in the belt, but also, too, it's a great way to set yourself up for success.
One place it doesn't matter if you work your fucking dick off to get a position, or your vagina or tits or whatever you got. Like, if you know, you could work off any of that, is North Korea. So we want to welcome in Michael Malice, who wrote the book Dear Reader. You'll hear about that in a minute. Here we go. Well, now on Zero Block 30, I'd like to welcome the author of a book called Dear Reader. You might recognize that pun instead of Dear Leaders, Dear Reader. It is Michael Malice. Michael Malice, welcome to Zero Block 30, my friend.
Thank you so much.
So whenever I was on Twitter and I was asking people, I need somebody to come on, talk about life of North Korea, the stylings of North Korea, and without fail, your name popped up. What got you into the point where you became like a de facto expert on North Korea?
Well, it's not de facto. I'm pretty awesome. So
yeah,
there you go. Wait, you're gonna listen.
So I'm short.
You're a bad man. You're not in the same room with me. You're throwing punches. I see how it is. No. It's not de facto. It's the fact that no one knows a lot about North Korea. I went there and I did a Kickstarter. This was a couple of years ago, because I'm like, I'm going to do something about this and get people informed about the subject, because there's so much misinformation and it's such an important issue. And it's also so entertaining, because you hear all these stories, and when you go there, the stories that they present are even crazier than what we're told. So
yeah,
when I was writing the book, I'm like, there's just a surplus of riches here.
And what blew me away when I was reading about it was how normal it seemed, right?
North Korea?
Well, it seemed like you weren't getting bothered.
Oh, no. So when you're there as a guest of the government.
Right, okay.
So you can do almost anything you want, because human life means nothing to them, and they want your dollars. So
okay,
in a sense, other than Otto Warmbier, which we could talk about later, it is safer there than here, because in Times Square you get mugged or something like that. No
sure.
one is bothering you there. You're a protected guest of the government.
Yeah,
as long as you abide by the rules, right?
Correct. But the same thing is, if you're going to go to the White House and you're going to sneak on a floor you're not supposed to and start stealing a painting,
mm-hmm.
those Secret Service boys aren't going to just wag their finger at you.
No, they're going to pop out and get you.
Right. So, I mean, he was trespassing. Of course, the idea that he deserves to be killed for this is insane.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, these are not people you want to test. They are evil and have no respect for human life.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, evident by the fact that the way they treat their own people.
That's exactly right. During the 90s, and I talk about this in my book, they refused to allow the UN to bring in food and chose to let 1 to 2 million people starve, because Kim Jong-il said having too many people makes socialism difficult. And also the idea that if the UN brings in food, then the government's going to be superfluous.
So whenever you were going around, did they keep you mainly in like the little tourist spots that they wanted you to see, or were you able to see like the whole gamut, like the basically concentration camps that they have as well, the work camp?
Yeah, they take us to the concentration camps. You know, you get your hand stamped, you look at the starving children who are beaten. No, they don't take you to the concentration camps. If you visit America, they're not taking you to Rikers.
That's a fair point.
But at the same time, there are no tourist spots. There's no place you can go to escape the decay. Even their Central Park where I went to, there's a fountain. The water wasn't running and there was mildew all over the mm-hmm. white marble. So everywhere you go, every single place, first of all, there's a fly everywhere. There's even a fly in the plane. And everywhere you go, something is wrong. Like, the bathroom will be rusty. If the elevator bank has four buttons, one will be mismatched. And you can't really point out something if you're a North Korean citizen, because that's complaining. So they have to pretend like everything is working fine all the time. So wherever you look, you're going to see a crack in the wall, or every carpet is just stained beyond belief.
Mm-hmm.
It's just – so you can't – at night, Pyongyang, the capital city, they don't really have electricity. So it's if you look at that famous satellite image of North versus South Korea at night, South Korea is lit up, you know, like the sun, and North Korea is a void. So you can't escape seeing what life is really like. And Pyongyang's the best place they got. They do, and they started opening up the whole country to tourism, although now obviously tourism is going to take a big hit with good reason.
Understandably.
Yeah,
so.
I don't think it's going to be a hot spot. You can find a place on Groupon anytime soon.
So, Michael, let's take a step back, though. What was the impetus for this book? And what, you know, because we hear all these stories about North Korea. You know, I have friends and chaps us too that serve in South Korea. You hear the stories.
Yeah.
So why would you even want to go there?
Well, a couple reasons. First reason, I'm serious, is party cred. So if you're at a party,
I mean, that's a hell of a story.
Yeah, you go. You've never been to Pyongyang.
You're automatically tougher.
It's the new Milan. You have to go. So that's number one, cred. Two is I was born in the Soviet Union,
mm-hmm.
so this
mm-hmm.
was my chance to see what my family must have gone through, you know,
right.
decades ago. It's
right.
like time travel when you go there. And third, it's just it's impossible to describe what it's like, because you don't have internet there. They mm-hmm. take your phone, right? It's impossible to describe what it's like to go in a country and you have no concept of the outside world and no way of finding out about the outside world. Yep. You're completely secluded. It's of such a weird, fascinating vibe.
Yeah, but you did say that people did know about like major events that happen in the world. So although it was maybe censored in a way, it wasn't completely devoid of what was going
but
on.
But it's a mix. So I was trying to pick my guide's brain to figure out what she knew and what she didn't know.
Right.
She didn't know what a scorpion was.
Okay.
Right? And if you think about how many ways you learn about scorpions, like TV shows, supervillains, movies, the horoscope, and with them, we don't have any here, so you don't need to know about it.
Sure.
And when I asked her about 9/11, she's like, of course we knew. They showed it on TV. I guess because America looks bad there.
Mm.
But she wasn't really aware of the Holocaust, and they don't even know that the U.S. and Japan fought each other in World War II. Because we're their enemies, Japan, the U.S. imperialists,
right.
and the Jap bastards, like they call them.
Mm-hmm.
So the idea that they were at opposite sides, from their perspective, what happened in World War I, or they call it the Pacific War, the great leader Kim Il-sung kicked out the wicked Jap devils from Japan, and he's the hero of the country. So that's their version of World War II. They don't care about Hitler or any of that.
Hmm.
We actually had a guest on that who fought in the Battle of Iwo Jima, and he said something that was really interesting, that they would have, that the Japanese had South Korean slaves, or they had Korean slaves,
yes.
and they said that the Americans were coming, so everybody killed themselves. Like, that's how against Americans they were, because everybody was indoctrinated that Americans were so bad.
Well, I mean, the indoctrination is, and I get into this in my book, is pretty bad. It's really funny because they say that we all have hook noses and we're all fat. So there was this one story, there was this elementary school, and this fat, you know, Korean party guy came to visit, and all the kids started beating him up, thinking he was an American because they'd never seen a fat person before.
Yeah.
And that's the whole thing with my book. It's that it's funny, and then you take a step back and realize, what's it like living in a country where there's no fat people? And that's not through choice.
Right, no.
They just don't have food. They don't have food. So there's a lot of these double levels when you're dealing with this country where at first you laugh, and then you take a second, and you're like, oh, this is so much more messed up than I realized it was. So, and when
there's a guy on BBC that was making comments about how, oh, you don't see any fat people because of the communism that's going on in North Korea. I'm like, yeah, because they don't have fucking food,
yeah,
dude. Like,
yeah,
it's not because they're not choosing Taco Bell. They don't have fucking food.
Taco Bell they definitely wouldn't have, because anything has to be Korean.
Mm-hmm.
So the idea you're going to have Mexican food is just absolutely crazy. When they
no Italian food, no nothing. It's all Korean food.
When
all the time.
They Kim Jong-il allowed in hamburgers, but he called it a double bread with meat. So I mean, but they do not have.
I don't hate that.
What's that?
I like that title.
Yeah,
that's a good title.
That's a good name for it. But so everything has to be from Korea and by Korea. Like, for example, my guide, I asked her, what do you want me to send you from the outside world? And she just wanted perfume. She just wanted to smell pretty. She's a millionaire there. But since they don't make it, you're not supposed to have it. And I got some smuggled in for her.
So how does she know about it then?
When you're a guide, you're talking to a lot of foreigners,
okay,
which is a very prestigious, trusted position. So she sees how college kids are 1,000 times wealthier than her,
mm-hmm.
and how we dress and the quality of clothes. I mean, she was a hipster because she's dressing in like 1980s clothes,
sure.
which is like the best she's gonna get. And she's, you know, very fashionable for North Korea. But you look at her and you realize, you know, she's trying her best in this prison.
Yeah, no, that was an interesting comment that you made. It's like almost like a giant demented prison.
Yeah, there was three or four American servicemen who defected into North Korea.
Right.
And one of them took him decades to escape, and he wrote in his memoir, Robert Jenkins, I didn't realize the nation I was defecting into is literally a giant demented prison camp.
Right.
And everyone there is a prisoner. Everyone's watching each other all the time. And, you know, if you escape, your family is getting punished for it. So anyone in North Korea who's a diplomat who travels to other countries, their family has to be left behind as hostages to make sure that person doesn't escape.
That's just, I mean, that's wild to comprehend that.
Yeah, we can't wrap our heads around it.
No, not at all.
It's hard. I mean, just hearing it, it's always so hard to envision where, I mean, there's always been movies and documentaries and you see shit, but whenever you're thinking that these are actual people who are living their lives this way and live sometimes decades under this type of regime.
And what's even crazier is when you see people on the news saying, like, Kim Jong-un insulted us, we got to bomb the hell out of them. It's like, you're bombing slaves.
Yeah.
Like, you're going to call yourself a moral leader and you're saying we should just bomb these slaves to oblivion and pat yourself on the back for it because someone called you a name?
Mm.
I mean, what kind of person are you?
Yeah, that's what it comes down to. It's like just name-calling back and forth.
Yeah.
It's like, really, what are they going to do to us?
Yeah, you know, call me all the names you want.
Sure.
I'm not interested in children dying over this.
No, No. But so I guess my question, obviously, you are not the first foreigner to visit North Korea.
Right, of course.
Throughout decades or however long people have been visiting, how has that knowledge of the outside world not permeated and made its way around the population of North Korea?
It started. So that's a big myth that they don't know about the outside world. They are increasingly, they have memory sticks that they smuggle in from China. They're watching
about scorpions.
Yeah, that's true. They don't really care that much about nature, but they're learning about the outside world. They're learning about how the propaganda has changed. The propaganda used to be that we're the richest country in the world. Mm-hmm. And now they're saying, okay, we're poor, but we're keeping our racial purity and keeping Koreanness alive, and we all work together. So this is a very big shift in their part and an acknowledgement. And this is why things are starting to fall apart for them, because the government can't provide food anymore. They have to have these black markets, and they're getting food through other means. And if you don't regard the government as the source of your food, what good is it? It's just a pain in the butt, you know, trying to keep you in the way of getting a good life for yourself.
And, you know, I hate to make this analogy, but it's poignant. Like, I'm a dog handler by trade. I was a dog handler for 10 years in the Marine Corps.
Oh, awesome. Wow.
And whenever we train the dogs, whenever I start training a dog, one of the first things that I do or make my handlers do is be the sole source of food for the dog. Because when you become the sole source of food for somebody, you become obedient whether you like it or not, because you know without that source of food, you're going to die.
And
so whenever you feed, you are the source of the provider.
And that's a perfect analogy, and here's why. If you tell your dog to roll over, it's not thinking, why do you want me to roll over? It knows, if I do this action, I'm going to get food for it, right? So it's the same thing there. It's like, I don't need to believe what I'm being told. I just know if I repeat these lies I'm taught in school, I'm not going to get in trouble, and I'm going to get fed. So, okay, I'll repeat whatever you want.
Sure, sure.
And they repeat those lies with earnestness. Can you talk kind of about the public displays of love for Kim Jong-un, what that kind of looks like?
Yeah, I mean, they have their big parades. They practice for, you know. So one of the things that Kim Jong-il, his father, railed against is having spare time. Mm-hmm. Because when people have spare time, they get the wrong kinds of ideas. So they try to have as much of your day planned for you as possible. And what better way to, you know, take care of your time when after school or after work, you all have to have these huge marches and coordinated things and working together and blah, 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 and put on these spectacles. So this takes up a lot of their time. I mean, they do love their leaders in the sense that, like, any country is going to love their leader to a point. Mm-hmm. But this is decreasingly the case. Like, when Kim Jong-il took over in 94, that's when the famine hit. So he was either powerless to prevent it or was the cause. So there's a very much increasing skepticism towards the leadership. However, they're not in a
position. And their leadership was gods, too, right? Like, they had them as, like, deities.
Oh, yeah. But somewhat. It's more like Uncle Sam. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But they're now, it's decreasingly the case because they each see each leader as being far worse than the great leader Kim Il-sung, who was the founder.
Right, and you even mentioned, like, right now, Kim Jong-un, like, he was, like, plan C to take over the country because he had older siblings.
Right. So this is also why Kim Jong-un got the leadership position. The eldest brother, who was recently murdered in that airport,
right,
he wanted to liberalize, he wanted to denuclearize, and Kim Jong-il's like, you're crazy. You've been infected with foreign ideas. We need to have nuclear weapons or else the Americans are going to come back and kill us all. So the youngest son, Kim Jong-un, promised to stay the course. And if you notice his haircut, which people talk about, it's the same as his grandfather's was in the 40s because mm-hmm. they're hearkening back to the old-time golden age.
The dynamite haircut.
Yeah. Yeah.
Thinking about getting it myself.
You're not allowed. You're not Korean.
Well, maybe I'll defect.
So then I guess the big question is then, like, with our current situation with North Korea, what is your take on how our government's handling it, how they should handle it, or just from your vantage point, knowing what you know more than the average bear?
Anyone who says they know what to do is lying.
Okay.
There's no good answers. There's no bad answers. It's going to be a really, really bad answer. Right now, as we're taping this, you have two people playing chicken. They're driving their cars at each other as fast as they can. Trump is not one for blinking. Mm-mm. If Kim Jong-un blinks, that might be the end of his life personally, because, you know, Gaddafi and Saddam Hussein, when these people are taken out, they're taken out with a bullet. Mm-hmm. So this is uncharted territory. I don't know. If you're a billionaire who has your own country and you have nukes, why would you quit that job?
Sure. No.
You know, so it's a very, very dangerous. The idea, on the other hand, the idea that they're going to nuke Guam is demented. If you're going to take one shot, you're not going for Guam.
No.
You're going to go for, you know, L.A. or something like that. But, I mean, they know, and they say in their propaganda, they know they can't win. Mm-hmm. So they're not, if they're, there's no point in them starting that fight because we will just absolutely turn them into a parking lot.
Sure.
In minutes.
So how is the honor code amongst the generals that are surrounding Kim Jong-un? Like, whenever they see how he is going to respond to the American imperialists, are they going, if he does blink, you think it'll be them that takes him out? Because they're so indoctrinated, too?
It's not that they're indoctrinated. It's that everyone in North Korea is always spying on each other. So if you're at that top position, you're there because of your loyalty. So they're the true believers at the very top. And also, they're the ones who are, you know, they've made their bed with him. You know what I mean? It's if one of them takes him out, he's going to get taken out.
Sure.
It's not like it's like a cabinet, but like these are cabinets for life, and these people have families who are going to, you know, be personally killed. So it's not like the possibility that someone at the very top goes rogue and takes him out. Honestly, if that happened, they would just clamp down. And you know, it would probably get even worse because now they have an excuse. I mean, think about like what would happen if some like Mike Pence shot President Trump.
Sure.
It's not like we're going to be like, all right, you're the president now, everything's
yeah,
fine.
Yeah,
it's
yeah,
going to
yeah.
be like goodbye Second Amendment, and some kind of crazy stuff is going to happen as a consequence.
Yeah.
And that actually happened in South Korea. The head of the CIA killed the president.
Huh.
Like, so South Korea was a crazy country for very many years.
So. I mean, just it's unstable.
Like,
yeah,
I know
it's very
like,
stable though.
Life,
it's been 70 years.
Yeah,
they're very
my
stable.
My whole life, and basically y'all's whole life too.
Y'all's.
You've basically been told that North Korea is just filled with a bunch of crazy people,
right.
And that the leadership is insane. They would never be able to hurt America. That's not your opinion, right? They're not crazy. It's calculated.
They killed a lot of people during the Korean War.
Mm-hmm.
Listen,
yeah,
you're
exactly.
telling me, even if they don't have nukes, you're telling me having missiles aren't going to be able to hurt Americans? That's,
sure.
that's absurd. That's number one. No, and there's a lot of servicemen in South Korea, as you
yes.
said. They can
there
hurt
a lot
them
of
very, they can
yeah.
hurt them very easily.
Yep.
So, but the thing is, they're not crazy. And here's I can prove it to you how quickly they're not crazy. If a lot of people listening to this show, I'm sure, practice their Second Amendment rights. If Rex Tillerson showed up at your door and said, give me all your guns, the answer would be no and shut up.
Yeah.
And then if he later said, well, let's sit down and discuss your guns, it'd be like, get the hell out of here.
Mm-hmm.
So, of course, they're having a rational response. I mean, they're
yeah.
evil, but I mean, that's not an illogical response.
And I think that we, as Americans, we view ourselves so isolated at times because we're our positioning in the world. We are kind of isolated. Having two oceans on both sides is pretty convenient.
Yeah.
South Korea is one of our biggest allies,
yeah.
and they have 9.9 million people 35 miles from Pyongyang.
Oh, yeah.
And they have nothing but artillery shells locked and loaded and ready to take out one of our biggest allies. That's a bigger city than Tokyo. It's one of the biggest cities in the world. I think it's a top 10 city in the world.
And
like 9.9 million is nothing to fuck with.
And even if they didn't have nukes, imagine just even missiles hitting a city that looks like Seoul. It would be like
right.
Independence Day, but for real.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
I mean, it would just be a complete catastrophe. And thankfully, all of Trump's people have pointed out explicitly, if there was war, this would get really, really, really bad, really, really fast.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like Iraq where, like, I mean, the Iraqis are firing missiles at Israel and, you know, that did some damage, but Seoul is right there.
Yeah.
And we were talking with Tommy Vitor last week, and he was talking about the war aspect. Even if we were to do a counterstrike, it would, from the trajectory of where our missiles would take off from, it would look to Russia like we were also shooting at Russia.
Jeez,
so Russia would respond and... It was just when he was telling me about it, I was like, this is a domino effect. We've
yeah.
got to be more careful than
and,
what we're being right now.
And it's even worse because the people in the concentration camps are told all the time, if the U.S. imperialists invade, we're going to kill you all and burn these camps down. So we're looking at like 100,000 to 200,000 people being killed within a day.
Jesus.
Can you give us a little idea of what some of those camps look like and what goes on in those camps?
Yeah, they gave me the tour, remember? No.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah,
we,
just from your research, maybe yeah. not from your GoPro perspective.
I mean, in all seriousness, I think I'm going to use this terrible word. I think we're all very privileged that we can't even imagine what these camps look like.
Yeah.
I mean, from the descriptions, they say the people don't look human anymore. They're dressed in rags. They're completely kind of, I mean, they don't have niacin, so they have pellagra. I mean, you have people losing limbs because you still have to work. in these camps. You have a job, and your whole family gets sent to the camp. So if you kill yourself, your family has to fill your quota. So they don't even allow death to be an escape from the torments in these camps. So, I mean, there's no heating. You're living in dirt. I mean, you can look at the camps from the sky on Google Earth. You can see them. But by all accounts, I mean, it's just – I mean, listen, it's going to be look like Auschwitz.
Yeah, I was going to say it's reminiscent of the Holocaust.
Yeah, of course, yes.
Yeah, we always talk about that in the news whenever they mention that it's just a dark area over the world, that it's something that's just completely bizarre to scientists, to intelligence operators, that South Korea is so bright and then you can't see anything. And when you can see in the day – is just horrific. The people movement there is it's horrific, but you've heard about it so your whole life that North Korea is fucked up. So I think that people are just so desensitized to the fact that these are still human beings that are being kept in places like this.
Well, that's why I wrote the book, because I'm like, okay, it's so fucked up. I want this to be told in an entertaining way because it's important people to know this and not shut down. Because mm-hmm. when you read most of the books, it's very, very dark.
Sure.
And given that you can't do anything, it's kind of like, I don't want to touch this. So I'm mm-hmm. like, all right, let me make this entertaining and interesting so that people get the candy as well as the medicine.
Yeah, absolutely.
And we shy away from difficult topics all the time. I mean, I didn't learn about Japanese internment camps being in America when I was in school.
Oh,
that's
wow.
not something that you talk about.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And I like how they use that term internment camp, because that
right?
makes it a lot better yeah. from a concentration camp, right?
Yes. Yeah, when it's the same fucking thing.
And actually,
yeah.
what's really funny, air quotes funny, the UN attacked North Korea for having concentration camps, and their actual response was, we don't use that term, so we don't have any.
That's
smart.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's one way to respond.
Yeah.
I guess it's true.
Yeah.
It's not wrong.
So this
semantics, but it's
yeah,
true.
Yeah, yeah, this is what they're, and they were attacked for human rights violations, and they say, we have human rights in our way, and for us, human rights means national sovereignty. So when you criticize our government, you're criticizing our human rights. You're violating our human rights.
It's basically like a country full, like the leadership of the country,
yeah.
of those sovereign citizen people who, like, you can't arrest me because I'm a sovereign citizen.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a citizen of the land.
Yeah.
Yeah, basically, yeah. They have no respect for international law. And on the yeah. one hand, you can understand that. On the other hand, it's not like they're staying put. They're violating other countries. They're kidnapping Japanese people. They're threatening other countries. If it was just like, we're going to mind our own business and be peaceful and fine, okay, mm-hmm. more power to you. That's
yep.
not what they're doing.
Yeah. So no. if you were sitting in the room right now with President Trump, what would your advice to him be?
I'd say take off that baseball cap, put on a MAGA cap. No, what would be my advice? My advice would be sit down with China and say, what's it going to take for you to kind of bring this regime into humanity and to have them have a soft landing, and give China whatever it is they want?
Mm-hmm.
Let them write the check, because they're the ones who are going to have to deal with this crap with 25 million refugees, you know what I mean, if the regime falls.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And they don't want an American ally on their border. Can't blame them. Fine, you don't need us on your border. Put your own little – make this your own new province. I don't care. Just have these people have food, have them have passports, have them have some information about the outside world, and my work's done.
Well, there you have it. We know that Mr. Trump is definitely a listener, so he'll hear that, and I'm sure that he will take heed. Michael, I want to thank you very much for coming on Zero Block 30. Make sure that you get his book, Dear Reader. It's incredible. I'm sure that right now it's flying off the shelves everywhere. You can get it at Amazon, anywhere books are sold. Mike, thanks for coming, man.
Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Well, thanks to Michael Malice for coming on. He was a busy, busy man just 2 weeks ago whenever North Korea is popping off. Probably has loads of time, because all people want to talk about now is statues getting pulled down and impromptu speeches in the bottom of Trump Tower. We're not going to talk about that. We are going to move on. And I just want to say, truth be known, I don't even really like pumpkin beers. I'm just doing it as a way to jinx the universe and to give me I'm trying to jinx Mother Nature to give me some cold weather, because it's like 110 degrees here now. I just can't fucking take it anymore, dude.
Can't take it.
I'm starting pumpkin season early.
It's kind of like Feel the Dreams. If you build it, they will come. If you just start drinking pumpkin beer, it's just going to get cold faster.
I told my wife, I came in from checking the mail. My mailbox is like 400 yards away from my house. I was sweating my fucking dick off going from my front door to my mailbox back to my house. I was like, babe, I'm about to go up in the attic and get the damn Christmas tree down. I got to do something.
I just got to will it to happen.
I got to do something. And McCartney hears fucking Christmas and she starts freaking out. She was super, super excited about it. We haven't had a badass in a week in a while, and Cont had somebody that he wanted to mention for badass of the week. So let's go ahead and bang that.
The badass of this week is actually going to be Lieutenant General Benjamin O. Davis Jr.
I'm so glad you didn't say Robert E. Lee.
We're a progressive podcast. We're not dumb. Yeah. No, but so
not
actually,
Robert E. Lee. Not Robert E. Lee.
Not
right, keep going.
Not General Lee.
Not Custer or not Stonewall Jackson either. Not gonna have that motherfucker. Nope, or Andrew Jackson. They're never
now,
gonna be.
Not now. Not never.
0-30. They'll never be.
We don't play that shit. Davis. He went to West Point in 1932, and he was the only African American cadet at that time, and he was shunned and he was silenced. And what that means is no one talks to you. No one interacts with you in any way, shape, or form. So you can imagine what a lonely existence that is. But then, you know, he persevered, graduated, and had a decorated career as a member of the 332nd Fighter Group, known as the Red Tails. And he became the first black general of the Air Force. Retired in 1970 as a three-star in 1998. President Bill Clinton appointed him as fourth star. But the reason I'm naming him the Badass of the Week is because West Point just finished a brand new barracks, and they are being named in his honor. Davis Barracks will be house cadets for the first time this year. So, Lieutenant General Benjamin O. Davis Jr., Badass of the Week.
That is awesome, man. Good one. That was a good and poignant choice.
Mm-hmm.
So we're doing save rounds alibis now. We'll do save rounds alibis. Have I ever explained what save rounds alibis even means?
I feel like maybe you glossed over it when the first time you said it.
That's probably something I should do since I say it every week. What save rounds alibis means? So if you're on the rifle range and you're shooting, like, so say you got 10 rounds in a time limit of 70 seconds from the sitting position, you may commence firing when your targets appear. Targets. So all the shooters are shooting downrange at the targets. If your weapon malfunctions and you do the weapon check correctly, and make sure that you get your weapon back up and operating, you are given what's called an alibi where you can shoot again. So if we go through something in the podcast or something that we want to add in extra, we are going to call it Save Rounds Alibis. Here's Save Rounds Alibis for this week. I am so fucking pumped, dude. I secured, made the reservations. Everything is locked in.
I
am going to San Diego. Well, Carlsbad. And I am going to be the guest of honor at the Marine Corps Ball there for Marine Corps Air Station Camp Pendleton. I am beyond fucking stoked. They're going to hear a lot of my stories. They're going to hear the recruit wear your penis story. They're going to hear a lot of some of my old tales. But they're going to hear about how much the Marine Corps means to me. And I know that a lot of the people on the podcast get that. And then I'm also going to go to Vegas to go to a Marine Corps ball, and I'm going to bring Miss Erica Nardini. She's going to be able to experience what the ball is all about. So going as a guest and then going as an observer, and the one that I'm going to observe is the guest of honor there is going to be a Marine Corps colonel who received the Medal of Honor for his actions in Vietnam. So hopefully while he's there, I'm going to be able to snag him up for like 20, 30 minutes and have him on the podcast because that would be incredible.
Yeah, man, that's fantastic.
Super stoked.
I'm happy for you, chaps, because, I mean, being the guest of honor at a ball, I don't imagine that's something you ever thought would happen.
Well, I've done it before. I did it at Quantico. Actually, oddly enough, my unit that I was at Quantico, the Marines were polled of who did they want, and they picked me. That was, like, probably the most humbling experience of my Marine Corps career was the Marines that I worked with picked me to be the guest of honor at their ball.
Oh, okay, well, that's very nice. But for this instance, yeah.
I didn't think it was going to happen again. You know,
yeah.
Like I didn't. That's a once in a lifetime thing, and I think because of the position that we're in here at Barstool, and like just things worked out. And the colonel who contacted me, he's a listener, and we've talked about this. Cons, it is fucking weird to me that like generals and shit listen to Zero Block 30 because it's just
wild.
Like a young captain and a young staff sergeant just shooting the shit and they're fucking listening and be like, hey, your lesson on leadership that day was pretty good. I'm like, shut the fuck up. You didn't listen.
Do you care to share the interaction you had with that colonel that you told me about when he was kind of fumbling over the details? Because I thought that was hysterical.
Yeah, I'll shout him. No, I'm not going to because I want to save that for the ball.
All right,
after
perfect.
The ball, we're gonna do a ball
teaser
video
there.
And you'll be able to see that. Yeah,
that's what we so in the podcast world call a teaser. That's gonna be a great story.
Little teaser. Again, big shout out to Michael Malice. Michael's a fucking weird dude.
Yeah, he's an interesting cat. He's an interesting cat. We'll say that.
I didn't know shit about him when he came on the show. I just knew that he was like a North Korea expert. I was Googling him because he was like in Charlottesville, like hanging out with the people that are alt-right. I'm like, is this dude alt-right? Like, am I going to have an alt-right dude on my podcast?
Right.
I don't think he is. I think that he just goes where he's not supposed to be, like, all the time. I think that's like his thing.
Yeah. No, he was interested. I mean, not many people can give you a perspective from being in North Korea. So, I mean, that was a great get for us, and we appreciate him joining us to share those tales with us. But it was interesting. I do have one save round alibi. Chaps, I had mentioned this to you. There is a very, very delicious restaurant right outside the gate of West Point called the Thayer Gate Deli. And as men, at least, and it is always something you aspire to have your name put on something. And the Thayer Gate Deli would like to name a sandwich after Zero Blog 30. So let's get the listeners involved. You know, let's build a sandwich. Maybe it's, Chaps, you mentioned the ZBLT. I don't know. Maybe that's an option. But we'll come up with it. Come up with a name. Come up with what the sandwich is. So tweet at us your ideas for a sandwich. And then I will chat with the owner of the Thayer Gate Deli, which, again, is delicious. So whatever we come up with, I'm sure will be fantastic. But that's very exciting to have a sandwich named after you.
All right, Charlie, step up to the microphone, my man.
Hey, so what's up, Chaps?
So Charlie has been our producer for a while now. He's been putting
almost the whole time.
Almost
since December.
So he puts together all the sound clips, and whenever I say hit that doggy bag music, Charlie, this is Charlie. Charlie just graduated from the University of Wisconsin, and he's got his first big boy job coming up. So we wanted to have him on and just say thanks, Charlie. We appreciate everything that you've done for us, man, and good luck to you going forward.
Thanks, Chaps. I really appreciate it. I've been working. Actually, the exact date was right after Pearl Harbor because there was that kid who was supposed to put in the FDR speech, and there was a gap. And I took over the following week. Connor reached out, who I'd known Connor for years, hanging out at KFC radio events and stuff like that. So Connor knew I'd done. I was the mail time and KFC radio producer, and it was supposed to be a temporary basis until you guys found somebody. But I think it's a testament to how great you two are to work for that I decided to, you know, instead of doing it temporarily through winter break, which was as opposed to, I was like, you know what, guys, like, I'd be happy to work for your podcast and take on the extra work. And I've learned a lot by listening to you too. And you're the two of the best guys to work for that I've ever had to in my experience at Barstool and really anywhere. So it was great working and humbling working for you. And Chaps, you actually once sent me some whiskey stones as a gift, which I wasn't sure whether to tweet you out doing that because I didn't know if you wanted that to be a private interaction, but I think that was one of the nicest gestures anybody's ever done for me too. So
this was supposed to be us talking good about you, not the other way around. So you're gonna need to shut up and go ahead and sound the
I love Zero Blog 30, man. I love it. I have my Zero Blog 30
Hey, when I say sound the retreat, it's done, Charlie. It's done.
That's true.
Sound the retreat.